Today is the Sunday before Halloween, so I'm going to be preaching from the perspective of the Hebrew Bible character I've dressed up as today. But since it's not exactly one of the most well-known stories, I wanted to put it in context first. The book of Judges is the seventh book of the Bible. So by the time we come into our story, the people of Israel have escaped from slavery, journeyed through the wilderness, conquered the land of Canaan, and split themselves into 12 tribes. The narrative of Yael is one cycle of a recurring story within the book of Judges, a story of cycles. The Israelites fall away from God's laws and into the hands of their enemies. The Israelites cry out for a leader to guide them out of their troubles, and God obliges them. In this particular cycle of the story, God has given the Israelites the prophetess Deborah to be their judge and leader. She delivers the Israelites from their situation, and for a time, there is peace as she sits in judgment. But eventually, the Israelites inevitably fall back into their sinful ways, away from God's laws, and the cycle repeats itself. In this particular cycle of the repeating story, the Israelites are under attack by enemy forces, and even though Deborah promises her people that they will prevail, that feels hard to believe. Not only are the Israelites outnumbered, but they don't have a trained army. A reading from the book of Judges, chapter 4, verses 12 through 22. When Sisera was told that Barak, son of Abinoam, had gone up to Mount Tabor, Sisera called out all his chariots, 900 chariots of iron, and all the troops who were with him, from Harosheth Hagoyim to the Wadi Kishon. Then Deborah said to Barak, "Up, for this is the day on which the Lord has given Sisera into your hand. The Lord is indeed going out before you." So Barak went down from Mount Tabor with 10,000 warriors following him. And the Lord threw Sisera and all his chariots and all his army into a panic before Barak. Sisera got down from his chariot and fled away on foot, while Barak pursued the chariots and the army to Harosheth HaGoyim. All the army of Sisera fell by the sword. No one was left. Now Sisera had fled away on foot to the tent of Yael, wife of Hever the Kenite, for there was peace between King Yavin of Hatzor and the clan of Hever the Kenite. Yael came out to meet Sisera and said to him, "Turn aside, my lord, turn aside to me, have no fear." So he turned aside to her into the tent, and she covered him with a rug. Then he said to her, "Please give me a little water to drink, for I am thirsty." So she opened a skin of milk and gave him a drink and covered him. He said to her, "Stand at the entrance to the tent, and if anybody comes and asks you, 'Is anyone here?' say, 'No.'" But Yael, wife of Hever, took a tent peg and took a hammer into her hand and went softly to him and drove the peg into his temple until it went down into the ground. He was lying fast asleep from weariness, and he died. Then, as Barak came in pursuit of Sisera, Yael went out to meet him and said to him, "Come, and I will show you the man whom you are seeking." So he went into her tent, and there was Sisera lying dead with the tent peg in his temple. This is the word of the Lord. Deborah is proven right. Every last soldier falls on the field with one single exception, their captain, Sisera, who flees the scene, valuing his life over his honor. He finds the encampment of his allies, the Kenites, and demands sanctuary, breaking the traditional rules of hospitality by hiding in the tent of a married woman and ordering her to lie for him. But if he was trying to save his own life, he maybe should have gone to a different tent. Because whether or not her husband is Sisera's ally, Yael herself is not. Did she belong to the Israelites before she married? Was it her people whom Sisera had tried to conquer? Had she witnessed the destruction of Sisera's wars and been sickened by the smell of blood upon the air and a sound as of many men dying? Was she afraid for her own safety or for the safety of the women in her camp? Did she act in self-defense? Did Sisera make threats against Yael that weren't recorded? Was Yael afraid for what a man of violence might do in his anger and shame? I can't tell this story without addressing the fact that, yeah, it kind of is a story of straight-up cold-blooded murder. But there are other stories of murder in the Bible that we celebrate. Has it ever made you uncomfortable to think that David must have looked Goliath in the eyes as he aimed his stone? I don't want to say that God is totally okay with murder, because there is, after all, a whole commandment about it. But I do think that we need to remember that this story is set 3,000 years ago in a totally different culture, in the tent of a woman by herself, with limited means of self-defense, and without a way to call for backup. And we also need to remember that Sisera is very much the villain of this story, a man who has conquered before and probably would have conquered again. It might help to imagine this story taking place in the midst of a war that we are more familiar with, maybe casting Yael as a member of the resistance in Nazi-occupied France. But we also have to remember that the Bible is rarely as clean-cut and black and white as we want it to be. It is full of stories of perfectly normal humans who do what they can, but often make mistakes, even while they try their best to serve the God they love. The moral of the book of Judges is that we can't succeed without looking to God for guidance. Every time the society of Israelites is falling apart, it is because they were all individually doing what they individually decided were good ideas, rather than coming together to discuss what God would want them to do. The death of Sisera, cold-blooded murder or otherwise, is ultimately a temporary fix. We can't have a perfect solution until everything that we do is rooted in the perfect love of God. And so we pray, as Yael and Deborah and Barak and all their people would have prayed, O Lord our God, return, bring peace into each home. Let your face shine on us all. Restore us as your own. Come, Lord, restore and save us. As long as I live, I will never forget what it felt like to stand over him, the tent stake in my hand. It seemed like time was frozen as I made my choice. The stake felt safe and familiar in my hand. I had been setting up tents for years, and my hands had calluses from the mallet and the ropes. That was women's work, but murder was not. Didn't God want something better for us than to live with blood on our hands? My husband's people were descended from Jethro, the father-in-law of Moses. The stories of how God's people fled from slavery, led and protected by miracles, were some of our favorite stories. But Sisera and men like him had been spilling the blood of God's people for 20 years. Didn't God want something better for us? My husband's people were at peace with Sisera's king, but were we really safe? We were a nomad people, never staying in one place for long, packing up and leaving once we had sold or traded all the goods and copper we could. I hadn't been wandering for as long as Moses had, but I had seen the effect of war on many different tribes and communities and cities. I had seen the hunger in the eyes of young widows, the grief in the eyes of the old. I had seen children playing and wondered if they would live to grow old, or whether Sisera's king would have them killed too. It all came down to the land. As nomads, my husband's people had no land to be killed for. If we'd had land for Sisera's king to take, I don't think there would have been peace between us. We weren't worth killing, and so there was peace between us. What kind of peace is that? What kind of peace could there ever be while men like Sisera killed for their own gain? His hair was black as a raven, black as shadows, darker than the blood that had dried on his thick and muscled arms, arms that were like marble pillars. I wondered how many men that blood had come from, since very little of it appeared to be his own. What would he do when he woke up? How much more blood would he spill? How many more mothers would weep for their sons? Did he have sons of his own that he would train to kill? I had seen the empty eyes of women taken as battle spoils. I had heard the stories of what women suffered at the hands of men drunk on blood and victory and anger. Would I be safe from him when he woke up? What would my husband do when he learned that a man had been in my tent? What would the Israelite general do when he followed Sisera to my tent? How many times, and by how many different hands, might I be punished for Sisera's choice to hide with me? I knew the laws of hospitality. I would have given him a drink, even if he had been my enemy, even if his people and my husband's people weren't at peace. But he had broken the laws of hospitality by commanding me to lie for him. And he had brought shame to my tribe by sleeping in my tent while I was alone. He might have sentenced me to death if my husband felt that I had been dishonored. The laws governing women are strict and hard. My body was not my own, but belonged to my husband, and my face was forever marked to show it. Sisera knew who I belonged to by the symbols on my tent. He knew I was a married woman from far away by the colors I wore and close up by the ink on my chin. And still he chose my tent, not caring if he caused death for me or shame for my husband. If I killed Sisera, would I save myself or sentence myself to death? If I took responsibility for his death, would I be preventing future bloodshed? Or would another man, just as bloodthirsty, come to take his place? Was there any good choice to be made? The man was fast asleep, as if he didn't have so many deaths on his conscience. He slept like he had been emptying skins of wine instead of skins of milk. He slept like the dead. I could have rolled him over, and he would not have woken up. I had one chance. If I failed to kill him, he was guaranteed to kill me himself. It couldn't possibly be what God wanted for us, living in the midst of war and death. There had to be something more to life in the world God made and declared to be good. There had to be something more than living in fear, living under the rule of men who are not always kind, who do not always let you say no, or live your life in freedom. I had to believe that the world could be better, that humanity could be better, that we could really have a chance to live out God's dream for us. I had to believe that there could be something more than what we had. I knew that the death of one man could never fix everything, but at least there would be some little bit of justice, at least this once. I wished there was a better solution, but what other options did I have? I could never overpower him if he were awake. I wasn't a judge, or a prophetess, or a queen, or a general. The power I had was what I held in my hands. But there had to be something better than this. God had to want something more for us than this cycle of bloodshed. What would it take for us to live in peace in a land of milk and honey? I had prayed. I had waited. I could not afford wasting any more time. The Israelite army would surely track Sisera to my tent, and when they drew near, he would surely wake up. "O Lord," I whispered, "give strength to my arm for your sake, and for your people's sake, and for the sake of everyone who puts their trust in you." I imagined a patch of bare ground. I had done this so many times. I held the stake in one hand and the mallet in the other, and in one blow, I drove the stake all the way through his skull and into the ground. Sometimes I feel as though his blood is still there. Will these hands never be clean? Here's the smell of the blood still. All the perfumes of Arabia will not sweeten this little hand. What's done cannot be undone. I can only hope that God will smile upon me when I meet the Lord face to face. And yet, however many nightmares I have of blood on my hands, the people of God rejoiced in the peace that Sisera's death brought. We never stopped singing praises, and our mouths could not help but tell of God's marvelous works, where the Lord remembered promises both new and old, and gave us deliverance. In the 40 years of peace that have followed, the people of Israel have continued to sing the song of Deborah, the song of praise that she lifted up to God. "Most blessed of women be Yael, the wife of Hever the Kenite, of tent-dwelling women most blessed. He asked water and she gave him milk. She brought him curds in a lordly bowl. She put her hand to the tent peg. and her right hand to the workman's mallet. She struck Sisera a blow. She crushed his head. She shattered and pierced his temple. He sank. He fell. He lay still at her feet. At her feet he sank. He fell. Where he sank, there he fell dead.